Well, we've been studying this Sabbath school lessons about garments. And the challenge in this, as we talked about it when we first started, actually I think I taught that Sabbath school class too, is we emphasize the garments like it's covering something up. And I'm not so sure if that would be a masterful plan of the adversary to focus on the garment instead of what happens as a result of wearing that garment. And so we're going to be talking about a wedding garment. Now, in the lesson, they talk about the Matthew 22. I'm going to read to you the parable that Jesus talked about, and I'm going to stop and we're going to talk about it, and then we're going to read a little more. And Jesus answered, Matthew 22, verse 1. And Jesus answered and spoke to them again in a parable, saying, "The kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who gave a wedding feast for his son. And he sent out his slaves to call those who had been invited to the wedding feast, and they were unwilling to come. Again, he sent out another slave, saying, 'Tell those who have been invited, behold, I have prepared my dinner, my oxen, and my fatted livestock, and are all butchered, and everything is ready to come to the wedding feast.'" Have you ever been having a thing planned and no one came? Isn't that discouraging? You know, it's just interesting. As also a part-time teacher, I hear about these little parties that happen over the weekend. And someone say, "Well, only one person came to my party." And I always feel like, oof, you know, cringe. And then I'm thinking, well, I can tell you why. Let's talk about it. How did you set it up? Let's talk about how you interact on a daily basis. But, you know, that's not my role. But, you know, you hear these things and you hear, oh, it just cringes. You can imagine this. King said, go out and get them. Bring them in. But they paid no attention and went their way, one to his own farm, another to his business. And the rest seized his slave and mistreated them and killed them. But the king was enraged and sent his armies and destroyed those murderers and set them their city on fire. Then he said to his slaves, "The wedding is ready, but those who were invited were not worthy. Go therefore to the main highways, and as many as you find there, invite to them a wedding feast." And those slaves went out in the streets and gathered together all they found, both evil and good. And the wedding hall was filled with dinner guests. Okay, now if we just stop right there, tell me some of your comments. What do you think about that parable? And I'm stopping right there for a reason. What do you think about it when you hear that parable?
It's funny about the revenge. He said, they didn't come.
Go destroy what they got. Now that's an interesting aspect of it. Go destroy what they've got. So if they're not going to come, but let's just kind of make this real in a sense. Okay, wonder if they RSVP'd. Wonder if they said, we're going to be there. We plan to come. My wife and I, when we were, I guess both, 21, 20, somewhere around that. We went to a wedding. I was going to the University of North Texas, and my undergraduate and one of my classmates was getting married. Not a real close friend. She was African American, but I got an invitation as a, I guess, general class. So we went to the wedding. When we went to the wedding, we walked in, sat down, and we had somebody come behind and say, "We're going to need you to leave." We said, "Why?" "Because your wife's not wearing a dress." And you talk about kind of, we just got up and left. We didn't want to create a scene. But that's kind of the opposite. They deemed her attire, and we weren't in jeans. We weren't, you know, we'd worn office attire. But they deemed her clothing unacceptable for their church. And they said, women are not allowed in our church without a dress. So that's kind of the opposite of that. We had no idea. We didn't get a thing where, you know, this was kind of a general class announcement. I mean, like I said, I really didn't know this person really well. But do you think about it, okay? Here this king has invited these guests, and if they all decide they're not going to come, Go ahead.
I thought it was interesting that the attitude of the people who were invited that got angry and murdered the people who, the servants who came to invite them.
Okay. That's an interesting thing. Go ahead, Rodney.
I'm thinking that he must have been a popular king. I mean... You invite someone, no one shows up. So he must have been disliked.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it classifies the guests at the wedding as both bad and good.
Both bad and good. That's the ones that came, that they finally, the second, right, the second time they came. But the ones who came in, who were invited initially, just kind of refused. Go ahead.
I'm seeing the king talking to us in this class. We were the ones that were invited after the initial group, after mm-hmm. the Jews rejected mm-hmm. the gospel, just like Peter's vision regarding Cornelius. Now, we have been invited to come to the wedding, and of course, some of us are losing this. But I see that as a big consolation that regardless of the initial people God had a plan to save, he extended that to the rest of us. By grace, we are there.
Yeah, and I think in a parable, we've got to look at understanding the context. Weddings at that time period were sacred events. They were, it was, you know, in fact, I'm going to a wedding this afternoon of a former student. Diane and I both taught this girl when she was in fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth grade. And it's at a Catholic church, you know, so I'm going to this wedding and I'm thinking, you know, This is not just a simple wedding. It starts at some time. It's going to end late tonight. I told my wife, we're going to see how long we want to be there. But you think about it. You realize at times that this was not just a simple thing. It was something sacred. You think about how this was almost scorned by these people. And then you go to the, use the example of Jesus. Who did he come and talk to initially? Came to the Jews. He presented it. They were looking for the Messiah. They were anticipating it. Just like all of those individuals were anticipating going to the wedding. But the day of the event, oh, well, I've got this to do. Oh, well, I've got this to do. Oh, well, I've got this to do. And how they lost sight of what they were looking for. And you know what? That to me is an important thing to look at. How can we lose sight of something we're anticipating? As Seventh-day Adventists, we talk about the second coming. Well, are we so focused on the second coming, we look at, don't know how to experience our living well today? Do we not focus on what do we do today to, or how do we relate as our fellow men? I mean, the Jews were so looking forward to the Messiah. They were all doing that, but I'm not sure he was right there among them. And I think the same thing exists today. God is right here with us. But sometimes I think we get caught up in this event or this event. Now, I stop there. The lesson and continues to go. And I reason I stopped there because there is a controversy among theologians, and I read one that says these are two different parables. And, you know, I'm not going to weigh in on that because I'm not a theologian. But to me, I like the idea that it may not be. So let's read the next part of this. But when the king came in to look over the dinner guests, he saw there a man not dressed in wedding clothes. And he said to him, "Friend, how did you come in here without wedding clothes?" And he was speechless. Then the king said to the servant, "Bind him hand and foot and cast him into the outer darkness, in that place where there shall weeping and gnashing of teeth. For many are called, but few are chosen." Reason I personally like this separation because I think one of the things that the devil would love us to believe that God is arbitrary, that he is adversarial, and that he invites these guests in here, and then somebody doesn't have the proper attire. Now, there's some belief that everyone is offered a proper attire when you come in, that you put on they give you the proper attire, and that maybe this man refused to put it on because he said, well, my clothes are fine, what's wrong with that? You know, all of this is speculation. But I think it would be nothing but delight to the devil to see, for us to see God as, okay, you're in, you're out, you're in, you're out, you don't have proper clothing, you're out. You know, that experience that happened over 30-some years ago with my wife, I can still recall that feeling of, you don't belong here, your wife's not wearing a dress, you have to leave. And wow, you know, that was just a shock. I don't even remember what denomination of church it was. I don't remember that, but I just remember the impact of somehow being told, you don't fit because you don't have the proper attire.
But Roger, are they talking about real attire here, or are they talking about righteousness?
Well, what do you think? You tell me.
I think they're talking about righteousness.
Okay. Okay, so they're talking about, you know, and the lesson talks about robes of righteousness. So let's talk about that. What do you think when you think of a robe of righteousness? He didn't have the robe, and that's symbolic of righteousness. Go ahead.
Well, looked at righteousness as the character.
Speak up so they can hear you over in the corner.
As the character of God.
Okay.
And as everyone is invited to the wedding feast, the character of God, as we all are, is available to us,
mm-hmm.
whether we choose to be transformed or participate or develop that character of God or not, is really our choice. And I think it's what's symbolized by the guy came in with a wedding garment. Didn't you have a wedding garment?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had a wedding garment, but I thought my clothes was good enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God presents his character to us and says, well, you know, God, that's fine, but I think I'm okay.
Okay.
And I think that's what this parable is looking, touching on.
Okay. How about the rest of you? Go ahead.
I also think that, first of all, the king, his son, got married.
Mm-hmm.
So when they opened the invitation to everybody, good and bad, it absolutely does symbolize the fact that we, you know, non-Jews were invited into the fold of Christ. So I think about the fact that they have to wear this particular garment, and it was required because at a wedding, everybody knows that some decent clothing is
mm-hmm.
part.
Right.
And this was a royal wedding.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that a man chose to come in his own garment and not accept the robe of righteousness, which is the robe of Christ, I thought about Adam and Eve.
Mm-hmm.
You can wear the robe of righteousness and still have your character. It does not diminish the personality, because God made us a certain
mm-hmm.
way. We have a certain character.
Mm-hmm.
When we get to heaven, we won't look like this, but we will be known by, I'm going to still be known by my character.
Go ahead.
The important thing to remember is that this role was something outside of the person themselves.
Absolutely.
By the king. So it's not something that originates with the person. It's not
mm-hmm.
their own righteousness we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that's got to come from the divine.
Okay. So it's something outside, and for whatever reason, this person said, no, I don't think I need that. I think I like my clothes a little better, or whatever. Some have suggested, I read one commentator talk about that Matthew's the only where this actually appears in the Gospels, and that this Matthew was writing to the Jews, but it might have been a recognition that, hey, okay, you Gentiles, you're going to join here, but you still have to take on this robe of righteousness. Because you think about all the controversy with Paul and some of his teachings and how he, you know, some say he did away with the law, which we know he didn't do, but that was a lot of the controversy. And I think you have to take all this in context and understand it. But this robe that we take from the outside, this robe of righteousness, what is it doing? What is that robe of righteousness doing? I know Ernie talked about the prodigal son last week and the taking that robe and putting that father putting that robe. What did that robe do?
covers up all of our faults. Right?
Covers it up, so we're just tricking God because we're now got it all covered up?
No, not to trick God. That's a robe of love.
Okay.
So we won't be shameful to others. We take on Christians. Hopefully what people see in us, that beauty that they see is Christ. It's not us. That's what draw people to us and say, why are you so happy? Why are you smiling? Why are you so content and at peace? It's not me. I'm in disarray. But with the robe of Christ, I have that peace. And what's hidden from people is God's love and His mercy covers my faults and the multitude of sin that's in me.
Think of the experience with your sister. You say, I'm at peace. Your sister's dying. How can you have peace when somebody you love is dying? That's, to me, just like the sermon this morning, those of you who weren't there, that talked about a man who was able to forgive the murderer of his son and develop a relationship. What is that? There's nothing in our human nature, in our human understanding. I mean, psychology would say, okay, that happened, he needs to have the consequences and blah, blah, blah. But what happened? So I guess that robe of righteousness, I'm curious, what the rest you think when you hear that robe of righteousness? What is it, what happens to you? What does it mean in your life? Go ahead.
Yesterday we had a wonderful time discussing Nicodemus at our worship service in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw how Nicodemus, Bible says that he was a ruler of the Jews. And he was also a Pharisee. And we know what a Pharisee means, that they knew the law.
Mm-hmm.
So Nicodemus thought that by keeping the law, fasting and doing all those things, he was right with God. Mm-hmm. And that even if the heavens would open that very day, he would go to heaven. But as he drew closer to Jesus and listening to what Jesus was preaching, he saw that he fell short of all the laws that he was keeping and that it did not qualify him to even get to heaven. So he went ahead and asked Jesus, what should I do so I can inherit the kingdom of God? Mm-hmm. And then Jesus said, you need to be born again.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that Nicodemus, in his own mind, was trying to do good by his own strength. In his own clothes or in his own suit to get to heaven. But Jesus made him know that he needed another clothes to get to where he wanted to be. So when Jesus told him that he needed to be born again, he accepted it that, how can I be born again? Can I go into my mother's womb?
Right.
And then even as Jesus presented the message to him, he saw that he needed another garment to be able to go. And that is the righteousness of God that will cover you, wash your sins, sanctify you, purify you, put you into another state so you can go to heaven without your own works.
Yeah, I think the more we study and understand God, and that's why I think what Ernie and Rob are doing is so important, the more you love and understand Him, the more abhorred we are of the fact of how sinful and how much we miss the mark. You know, and you know, as a therapist, I sometimes struggle with that thing. Well, you know, sinful, I'm bad, I'm terrible. It's not about being, it's about an understanding of the human condition. You know, and I think that's an important thing to recognize because, you know, we recognize that we each have a recognition. The more we understand and behold God, the more we recognize how much He has done for us and what that really is. And I think that's an important part. How about the rest of you? Tell me what some of your thoughts are. Go ahead, Randy. Wow, that's a neat thought, isn't it?
So it's not to cover up anything. It's so the son is proud to be the father. Mm-hmm. This is my son, and the son's not embarrassed.
Okay, go ahead.
So one of the things that I'm wondering,
you know, but we use the English term, we always use the term covering.
Mm-hmm.
The Bible also talks about a transformation. It's sometimes that they kind of cloud the water a little bit. Because we talk about God covering, so it's the imagery of something put over us with God. But do we lose it in our translation, our English? Is the covering that God talks about as a transformation? Because it's not covering this mess that's going to be. I do remodeling, and you know, over an old wall, fall in. You know, so we usually have to tear the wall out and put new things that really transform the room.
Okay, that's a great analogy. In your work, you have to decide, can we go use what's there, or do we have to tear it out?
Yeah.
Because sometimes you can have some remodelers, some people will make it look great, and a year later you'll see big cracks. You'll see all kinds of problems. Why? Because they just covered it. And I think that's one of the dangers of talking about a robe of righteousness as a physical putting on. Because sometimes it's like we're almost just trying to trick others or maybe trick God. You know, okay, put on Jesus' righteousness. Now God can say, okay, God, looks all right to me. I don't think that's the emphasis. I think the robe of righteousness means something transforms in you because you realize my Father doesn't want me to be embarrassed. My Father's accepted me back even though I have been in the pig pen and I stink and I'm filthy and I just want to be his hired servant. My Father is taking me back and he's covering me. Now, what would have happened in that story if we would have said Father, I don't need that clothes. Let me go get myself cleaned up before I put on that robe. Go ahead.
I love the word restoration.
Mm-hmm.
Goes in with what you're doing. You restore it to its original.
Absolutely.
Condition. And I think that's what Christ is doing in us, is to restore the filthy rags that we have on with his garment, which is the perfect garment of righteousness, given to us at Calvary.
Absolutely.
It's beautiful.
Go ahead.
And I like what you just said. The lesson even brought this out, that sometimes some of the meanest people are in the room. Not your own. You walk in the door, and like you remember, you and your wife remember what happened 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
My sister was a brand new Christian, Seventh-day Adventist, and went to a church. She bakes cakes. She took a cake to church. And this lady who had been in the church for a long time, she came up, she said, what's in that cake? We don't eat sugar, we don't eat this, we don't eat the... my sister and her husband has never gone back.
Mm-hmm.
That really scarred her.
Sure.
She has never baked them another cake. She was running her down, what's in that cake? With, all these things. But I love what you said. It is not really just a putting on of something. It has to be inside of us.
Yeah,
the robe of righteousness. And we, I guess when we use the word covering, we're thinking of covering. And the truth is that it immerses us into us and ingrains within us. So that, again, like I say, people don't see me.
Mm-hmm.
It's always about Christ. And that's what the robe of righteousness is about. If you think about, again, Adam and Eve, they didn't even know they were naked.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as they sinned, they knew that something had changed and they were now exposed.
Mm-hmm.
It's that exposing that the robe of righteousness covers.
And you love the question, who told you were naked? Who told you were naked? But that was the first thing they wanted to do. They wanted to cover themselves. They wanted to put on that. You had something, Trent?
Another thing that happens is, as you know, as a counselor, is a lot of times people do not feel worthy to wear certain clothes.
Absolutely.
And when their lives are changed, or they recognize that God's in their life, then they have a sense of worthiness that they didn't have before.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And they don't feel worthy, and they just want to reject it. Absolutely. Absolutely. Someone else. Go ahead.
Question. What do you think about calling this guy without the robe print.
What do you think? Tell me what you think. I'd like to hear what you think.
He wasn't confrontational. Mm-hmm. He asked a question. Mm-hmm. He recognized that from his point of view, you're mm-hmm. still a friend. Mm-hmm. But there is a problem here with our friendship. And it's not from God. From.
Absolutely. I like that. Personally, I like to think of God as a friend. And that changes the connotation as far as friend, you know. Go ahead. Someone else over here had their hand up. Go ahead.
This is about what you were saying. I had a dream.
Oh, no.
I shared it with my wife. I was in a place about this size, and it was with the walls kind of loosely over there, and we, these people that was there, was so bad. Ooh, they was, I don't know what kind of people they were, but anyway, it was a guy that a speaker uh-huh. that told us, say, you got a little change in your hand. Hold on to it. Say, see that wall over there? Yep. Jesus is coming through that wall. So we sit there and we couldn't leave. We couldn't do nothing. If we did, they would kill you. Showing up, I was sitting there, I said, man, Jesus. And showing up, Jesus showed up.
Mm-hmm.
Came in, looked around, and went back out.
Oh, wow.
Then the man said, now you all can leave. So we leave. We left. So I said this, that you have to obey and believe. Now, I don't know what that dream was telling me. I don't know. Yeah, I'm 76 years old, and the devil just let me loose. I can't figure that dream out.
Well, let's.
I told my wife. I said, I don't know what to think of this dream.
Let's talk a little about that whole word obey. You know, you think about that man, quote, didn't obey the etiquette, didn't obey the that. Now, we don't have our lawyer here that I was going to ask him this question. How do you go to court? Anybody been to court recently? I went and testified in a. Yeah, I've testified a couple weeks ago, and you know, I put on my suit. Why did I put on my suit? Etiquette, respect, credibility. Okay, I was going to professional witness, so I was going to be credible.
Protocol.
So I put on my suit. Was there any sense of doing it out of love? Not a bit. Not one sense of it. There wasn't any sense of that. I just knew the standards that I was going, and I knew what I needed to do in order to present myself so that the jury would listen to my testimony. And that was my focus. So I put on these garments that I don't usually wear on a daily basis so that I would be seen a certain way. And I guess to me, it's a recognition that I think that's what was happening a lot. And that, I know it still happens today. We put on our garments wanting to appear some way. But what is it? Where's the other thing? Now, let's take another scenario. Most people aren't single in here, so if I was used single, I wouldn't be. Well, let's just say you're going on an anniversary date with your wife, with your husband. You're going out somewhere fun. You get excited. You're going to wear your work clothes, your old dirty jeans. You're going to wear your whole T-shirt that's a hole in it. You're going to do that? You wouldn't do that? Why not?
You can't go where you're going.
Okay. Let's say you're not going paintballing. Let's say you're going somewhere to have a nice meal, to have a nice evening. Would you wear that? No. What would you wear? Sports coat. Okay. Why would you do that? Because she made you. Okay. And that's oftentimes how it appears. Well, okay, God's making me do this. This is a Sabbath day. I know it's Saturday. We've got to go to church because it's Sabbath. And if we don't go to church, who knows? There may be certain a thing about having to go to Sabbath. So let's get there on Saturday. But that is kind of that, well, I'll put this on. But truthfully, if you're in a loving relationship, you want to go and be acknowledging of that love through how you present yourself. You want to do that because this is, hey, we're going to go have fun. Now, does that mean you women are going to wear 10-inch heels so your feet are uncomfortable and you're walking like this all day? Whoops. I didn't even do it. I stumbled myself. No, you wouldn't do that. You would wear comfortable clothes, but things that would reflect you're valuing the other person and yourself. Because of the experience of love. Because of the experience of sensing, wow, I want to have a wonderful experience. There's no more awkward experience in my life. Now, well, there's probably many more awkward, but one awkward experience in my life is being in a place where you're not comfortably dressed with the rest. I mean, that's kind of feeling out of place.
You just reminded me of another part of the parable I don't think we've touched on yet, is when they went out and got the second group of people, and they were good and bad. There were some people who came because they were genuinely interested in seeing the wedding and participating. But there was a group of people, or some folks in there who just went and probably said, hey, a free meal, you know? And they fell on the clothes. I mean, they apparently accepted the clothing because the only person they talked about who didn't have clothes, they got kicked out with that one guy. But I think it's interesting, and I love that. You're absolutely right. I mean, this thing is open up, wide open to everybody.
Absolutely.
And so even if you start off attending or going to the wedding just out of curiosity or just because you have nothing else to do, nothing's on the calendar, let me just go, you end up finding love there.
Something happens when you meet Jesus and you're open that will change your life. Something happens. Think of all the people that Jesus had contact with and some of the most idiotic situations, demoniacs. Their life was changed in an instant. And then Jesus said, go back to your homeland. Tell them what's happened as a result of meeting Jesus. He didn't sit down and say, let's do a Bible study. Let's get this. Let's get you aligned with the Jewish belief, or let's get you aligned with this. He said, go. Tell them what happened as a result of meeting Jesus. To me, that's such a powerful experience. That experience changed their lives. They responded, and in that response, Jesus created them anew. And I think that's sometimes what we miss, is it's not putting it on, it's, wow, you don't want me to be embarrassed by others. You are taking me in as if I'm a never sinned. You are saying to me, I am your child. And you are my father. And that recognition does something for us. Something happens inside. I liked your word. You said it's restoring to our original nature. Restoring to how we were meant to be. In that restoration process, we don't try to cover up. We don't try to put a new fresh of paint on it. We're restoring to what was originally there. And that's such a dynamic principle that I think is worth focusing on and keeping aware. It's what happens as a result of recognizing we've been accepted and loved and taken in by God as if we have never sinned. What did David experience when he had that revelation about his sin? Wow, and he became more conscious of how much God loved him and that how he was forgiven. Didn't take away the consequences. Didn't make it everything, quote, happy ending. But yes, it was a happy ending because David, it said about David, he's a man after God's own heart. Wow, what a statement. So I think we have to keep the focus on understanding and knowing what that righteousness means in our lives and what it, how it happens. The son is still dead. That man has to wake up every day.
Live every day in his life that he took another life.
That's absolute.
Because of the forgiveness, he's been restored that he can accept what he, you know, and move on.
Absolutely. 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 Go ahead.
The author of the lesson makes it very clear that in all the phases of our salvation, God has made a provision already.
Oh, absolutely.
That all that it requires of us is that we will be obedient.
Mm-hmm.
So when he mentioned the issue of obedience, I said, that is the issue.
Yeah, and I guess the obedience is that recognition that even God provides the ability to be obedient. I mean, that's the interesting part. I mean, I guess growing up as I did in the Northeast in an Adventist school and stuff, sometimes it got, it, you know, and I want to be open to my interpretation, but it sometimes seemed like, oh, I got to do this and this and this in order to be okay. I've got to do these things. And it became that focus. I mean, you can be as lost in your goodness as you're lost in your destructivity. And I think that's the key in this. And to me, in this whole thing, is that somehow this individual didn't think he needed the wedding garment, whether he was provided, whether he didn't want to put it on at home, whether, you know, all of those things are speculative, but somehow he thought, I don't need this. And to not need God is to reject God. And when you reject God, he just lets you go. I mean, you talk about a loving God is, if you're going to reject me, I'll just let you go. And to not be in connection with God is to be destroyed, because God is life. You know, we emphasize too much the destruction part, when the reality, he's just letting us go and saying, I'll honor your wish. As a parent, that is one of the hardest thing to do. I'll honor your wish. Sometimes we want to make them see the light and do it a certain way. When maybe with this, I'll honor your wish. I'll tell you my concern. I'll tell you all my things I'm upset about. I'll tell you all of my anxieties. And I'll try to help you this, understand this. But at some point, I'll honor your wish. And I think the robe of righteousness creates something within us that we, that's a phenomenal. I'm sure many of you maybe have heard of Graham Maxwell. He died last year. But one of the thoughts that he had that I've listened to his tapes for years and years was the friend, the whole idea of a friend. What a friend we have in Jesus. And I love, you know, and he went through the whole 66 Bibles and talked about how God is working through all of those stories to help us understand how much he loves us. But he writes here, let's say we're covered by the righteousness of Christ. How does this actually work? This all being very real. Here's the Father. Here's 100 million angels of Daniel 7 as the courts sit in judgment and the books are open and my case comes up. And I have a dreadful record. But I don't need to worry because I'm covered with the righteousness of Christ. And fortunately, God does not have 20/20 vision and doesn't know the secrets about what's inside. Now Jesus knows what's inside, and I'm sure my guardian angels knows what's inside, and the accuser of the brother knows what's inside. In fact, he accuses me day and night before God and says, do you want to know what's inside? If God looks, nah, it looks pretty good to me. I don't like the thought that I'm somehow sneaking into the kingdom of in disguise. Someday God may learn the truth about me. If I'm not changed inside, I'm not safe to be around. So this obviously is not the purpose of this disguise. I mean, God knows. He knows me just as well as anybody else in the Godhead. God says that I not only forgive you, but I will treat you as if you've never sinned. In fact, I will treat you with the dignity and respect as if you have always been my loyal children. To be covered with the righteousness of Christ is not a disguise. It means we'll be treated as if we have lived as righteously as the Son. You hear that statement? He'll treat us as we have lived as righteously as Jesus Christ. So covered with the righteousness of Christ, what it means, I take it to mean that because Christ answered all the problems, He is not asking me to do it. He's asking me, do you want to respond to these answers like the loyal angels have? Have you been won back to trust me? Are you willing to listen? If so, I can heal the damage done. And even though I'm pretty sick patient in the Heavenly Father's eyes, God will treat me with the dignity and respect as if I have lived as nobly as His Son. I think that's covering. I mean, He would really do this. He would treat me with dignity and respect as if I'd never been disloyal. To me, that's such an exciting thing when we recognize what it means. That son and the prodigal son knew when his father put that robe around him, put that ring on him, gave him sandals, he knew what that meant. His father was saying, I've taken you back, you're my son, you're right back with me. What was the son's version of the story? Maybe I can be a hired servant. What was the father's version of the story? You are my son. You deserve to be royalty. You deserve it because you are my son and I've missed you and I want you right back here. You know, I'm sure Ernie talked about it, but I've been stimulated about that prodigal son a lot too. And what was the other version of the son's story? Father, I've been doing all these good things and now I'm nobody. And what was the father's version? Son, everything I have is yours. I've been with you for all this time. So I guess it comes down to whose version of the story we're going to believe. Our version? I'll try to be good enough. I'm going to work hard, God. I'll do this. Or we're going to believe God's version. God's version is, I love you. I want you to be with me. I want you to realize who I am, because in realizing that, you're going to be restored back to who you were meant to be. Personally, I'm going with God's version. Because God's version works a lot better in my life, works a lot better in many ways. And I think it's important we talk about these robes and these garments as we have for the last 10 weeks or so. It's important to realize that they all reflect an inner experience that is a result of that can be seen outwardly. I go to court so I'm seen as a professional witness. I don't go to, and that's why I dress a certain way. It's not out of a love for the whole system. It's not out of love for the judge or the attorneys. It's out of a thing of, this is how I present myself. God has no interest in us wanting to do things because He's demanding it. He's saying simply as, if you love me, this is what you'll do because this is who I am. I am love. Shall we pray? Dear God, we're so grateful on this Sabbath day that we can come together and put out ideas and discuss different ways of understanding your love. As we talk about these, we realize it's easy to talk about, but may each one of us in our lives really know what that means to experience it inside. May that become so part of who we are that it's just like it's always been there. Because we know in your eyes that has always been that way. That you have called us, that you want us back. We're so grateful for that. And as we continue this Sabbath day, may we continue to have this experience of recognizing your love and responding to it daily. In Jesus' name, amen.